I don't usually get like hyped about the comic book movies as much. Like I'll usually go see them eventually and trickle into theaters, but this is the first time I've actually been like psyched and excited and counting down the days to see a comic book movie about a comic I don't even really know anything about. And I think that's really telling of what kind of movie is being made here.
Hi, and welcome to Episode Center Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Anna Catley.
This is Will Clayton.
And we're here. Anna, you haven't been on in a while, actually.
No.
Like,
it's been, I think, probably a few months. Yeah.
Like, once this year, I think, is what I added up at one point.
Wow, gosh. It's been a busy year for me, Brandon. I can't lie.
Yeah.
I'm very happy to be back, though.
Can you tell us what all you've been doing?
I have been working on two features that have taken up most of my year. So, as an assistant editor, still doing my own editing on the side, but assistant editor on a CBC Christmas film. For you guys who don't probably know what CBC is, it's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. The other film I'm working on right now is a film called Code 8 that's currently shooting in Toronto. And that stars the Amells and Han from Fast and Furious movies, which I'm very excited about.
Ooh, I love that guy.
I know. I love him too.
he was also, I loved him, not just, I mean, he's good in the Fast and Furious stuff, but he's really good in Better Luck Tomorrow, the Justin Lin's first movie.
I haven't actually seen it.
That one's good. It's a weird thing because his name is Han in Better Luck Tomorrow.
Oh, is it?
And I think Lin like made a comment at one point that like, it's the same character from Fast and the Furious. So it's like he retroactively put his first indie film into the Fast and the Furious canon, which is kind of weird.
Wow.
I don't know if it's true, but his name is Han.
That's like a glitch in the Matrix.
But they have different...
To examine that.
They have different last names. But anyway, and Will, it's been a while for you as well, I think.
I think so. It's been at least 4 or 5 episodes. I think my last contribution was back with our like first episode of the new year.
Yeah, Oscars predictions, I think.
I think it was.
February. Well, it's good to have you both back.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Good to be back.
And of course, one of the big things we've missed, or at least that I haven't gotten to share how awesome it was, I'm sure you and Thomas talked about it in previous episodes, was the premiere of... Camp Nichols, which was a huge success. And thank you so much for giving me an executive producer's credit. I was not expecting that at all. I want to give you massive shout outs for that. And finally making me an actual film person. Like, I am now part of the club officially. I'm an official filmmaker now. I was not expecting that, so that was great.
You're welcome. Anna has a credit on there too. I'm not sure what it is, but Anna is credited on there.
No, am I? On Camp Nichols?
Yeah,
oh my gosh.
Because we used a logo that you did for
the
last film.
The Lucky Sparks cigarette packet graphic. Yeah.
We used that in the film, so yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, Brandon.
You're welcome. We pretty much used the exact same, like we had in the first one we did Hartley, we had the cigarette packet that was like a special brand that we created, that Hunter actually created, and he got you to do the graphic design for. And we had a beer that was a local brewery. And then for this film, we used the same exact stuff. We got the same brewery, I think a different beer, but the same place. And then we used Anna's graphic for, which is, it's Lucky Sparks is what they called it for cigarette packets, and like homage to Lucky Strikes. Is Lucky Strikes still a thing?
I don't think so.
I don't smoke, I can't tell you.
It'd always
either.
Be a thing for me, thanks to Mad Men and Don Draper.
That's what I... See, I was just thinking of Mad Men. I don't even know of it in a modern context, actually. You know?
Yeah, I don't know of it either. But anyway, so what have you guys been watching lately in your 4, 5, 6 month off period? Lately?
Lately?
I know Anna's been watching, actually.
Oh, because I've been posting about all the Nicolas Cage films I'm watching?
No. Not that too, but also Twin Peaks.
Oh, of course I've been watching Twin Peaks.
It's the greatest.
And Riverdale, of course, because Riverdale's basically the... The trashy Twin Peaks. But, God, I love them both so much. I really do. I can't help how much I love Riverdale. We should really just do a full episode on Riverdale.
I got.
We could go on.
I lost track at one point, but yeah, Thomas started watching it as like he didn't know what how to take it, and then he just really just kind of fell in love with it. It sounds like. So yeah, so you've been watching Twin Peaks, and then you're also watching the Nick Cage stuff. So
yeah.
Can you talk about that?
I'm sort of doing. It's going to be a long time in the making, I think, because I'm examining a filmography, but I'm making another video essay about this time Nick Cage, and yeah. Kind of examining him as a cultural phenomenon, his how he got his status as a bad actor that he has now, and mm-hmm. I'm basically just watching all of his films and
yeah.
I'm going into this video essay with the idea that I love Nick Cage. Uh-huh. And I'm kind of going through all those films and figuring out where he went wrong and what mm-hmm. why he gets the reputation he does today, because I really don't think he's deserving of his crazy, insane, terrible actor reputation.
I agree. Is he the best B movie actor that makes A level work?
I wouldn't call him a B movie actor. If anything, he's a character actor. Mm-hmm. But even then, I think he has leading man qualities. I think he just kind of I think he just goes a little nutso in his roles, but I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. That's the thing I'm kind of confused about, is I actually really like that he's a crazy, unpredictable actor. And I'm excited to watch the 40 or so movies I have left to watch in his filmography.
What's some of the ones you've watched recently that you like that you hadn't seen?
I got some great suggestions from the Cine Nation crew when I first started thinking about this. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember which one of you it was who recommended Vampire's Kiss.
Thomas.
Okay. Bless Thomas. Honestly, bless that man. I'm going to tell Thomas this later. I love Vampire's Kiss. It was fantastic. I can't remember which one of you guys recommended Con Air.
I think that was me.
Yeah?
That was me.
Okay.
Lieutenant, Port of Call New Orleans, and Con Air are the two I think I mentioned.
Yeah, Bad Lieutenant was also great. I haven't seen Drive Angry yet. That was another suggestion you guys made. No, I'm like very much enjoying this journey, to be honest. And Con Air was actually a really exciting movie for me. I really liked so many aspects of that movie. I really did. I wasn't expecting that at all. Yeah, I think I started thinking about this based on the idea that I know I like him in a lot of things, and
yeah.
It must not just be flukes that I love, you know, like Raising Arizona or...
Great film.
Valley Girl, even. I love Valley Girl. It's totally yeah. underrated.
Have you read the quote that Ebert said about Cage?
There is an Ebert quote I love about Cage by Ebert. Yeah. Quote, I think, was in a review he did of Adaptation, and that's actually one of my favorite, like... It's what I use to tell people, look, this is a really great way of explaining why Nicolas Cage is a good actor. And it was Ebert describing scenes in Adaptation where Nicolas Cage is playing, obviously he's playing twins in that movie, and yeah. they look pretty much indistinguishable from one another, except for maybe like a little bit of messed up hair on one versus the other. But you yeah. always just feel like intrinsically that they're completely different people. Like it's like mm-hmm. their spirits are completely different. And you sense that not through Nicolas Cage as an actor. And that's what makes him a good actor, is he kind of keeps the two characters separate. And I thought that was actually a really great point that Ebert made about Nicolas Cage. I don't know if that's what you were going to say, but.
Yeah, the quote, I don't know if it's from a certain review, but it says he's daring and fearless in his choice of roles. And unafraid to crawl out on a limb, saw it off, and remain suspended in air. No one else can project inner trembling so effectively. He always seems so earnest.
And we can't forget. We can't forget the genius level acting that is Face Off, where Nick Cage plays John Travolta playing Nick Cage,
yeah.
and vice versa. I mean, if that's not the most meta thing you've ever seen in terms of just watching actors play themselves. I don't know exactly what is.
I don't want to get too cagey or get too cage loving here. But no, I think you'll go more into this when you're doing your video. But he can play wild and crazy characters, but then he also can play fairly straight characters. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't do it that much. I mean, National Treasure, he's fairly straight in the entire thing. He's playing like the leading man action adventure character in a way. Mm-hmm. There's nothing really, really crazy about him in that film at all. Matchstick Men, like he has like quirks to him, but he's not really crazy. He just has like little things to him that it's more rounding out his character than anything. It's just he's kind of like you're talking about, he's just kind of like gone downhill in his choices or the movies he's getting. I mean, because I'm going off of one of the articles we just recently did of like five actors that need a career makeover. There's one kind of article I'm trying to talk about of the five like comebacks that didn't go incredibly well. And I think Cage was one of them because he did Joe, which was the David Gordon Green film. And that was supposed to be his big comeback. Everyone talked about it. And then he really hasn't done anything of that like caliber and then what's the word? Not mainstream, but
straight to DVD releases.
Like not as much exposure. He hasn't got as much exposure since that movie is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't go incredibly well as, a Robert Downey Jr. or whatever. But anyway, yeah. Will, what have you been watching?
well, honestly,
a lot of Nick Cage.
Yeah, probably not as much like project level stuff like Anna's doing right now. But stuff I've been watching on Netflix, I've been watching F is for Family season 2. I don't know if you folks enjoy the comedy stylings of Mr. Bill Burr, but I really enjoy it. It's basically it's an adult cartoon for like 1970s family life in upstate New York with Bill Burr and Laura Dern and a bunch of other really good actors providing their voiceover work to the project. I think it's hilarious, but also kind of a little too real and depressing at points too. Other than that, the other stuff I've been watching in theaters, the last thing I just saw was It Comes at Night, which I actually enjoyed for the most part. I know a lot of folks, basically it was one of those movies you either loved it or you hated it. I didn't hate it, and I didn't love it, but I thought it was pretty good for what it was. So that's really all I've been watching of late, and other than Better Call Saul, of course, and Veep and Silicon Valley, you know, my standards that are on they're still running right now. Actually, there is one other thing. There's one other thing I have watched a couple times, and that was Wonder Woman,
which we'll be talking about tonight or today on the show. So what I've been watching. Well, for one, I started watching Twin Peaks for the first time ever. So I think I'm almost done season one. It got a little crazy when I had to come back to L.A., so I'm having to use like my parents' Showtime account to come back to watching it because I don't have Showtime here in L.A. and so I have to get back on that and finish season one. And then, because season one's like eight or nine episodes,
it's, right? I think it's six episodes. Oh, wait. You're right. Yeah. It's eight, and then there's 22 in the second season.
Yeah, which is it feels very daunting.
You don't even know.
22 episodes of Lynch.
You're gonna die. You think? It's like gets even crazier in the second season.
It's like right now, like it's starting off like kind of it. In the first few episodes, and everyone, if you're listening to this, you probably know this because you've probably watched it, unlike me. The dialogue's very stilted. Like it feels. Everything feels off, but it's in the first part, but it's not completely crazy. And then it slowly just starts getting weird. So yeah, it's interesting. So I've been watching that. I have been watching a little bit of the other Showtime show, I'm Dying Up Here, the stand-up show that Jim Carrey's producing. It's fine. I'm interested to see where it goes, because I really like seeing stuff on stand-up. But one big problem with things on stand-up, they kind of fall into the same type of stories over and over again. So I'm interested to see where this goes. And then when I was in Alabama, because when you're in Alabama in the summer when no one's really there, you just go to the movie theater a lot. And I went to the theater six times, I think. I saw Pirates twice. Not really because I loved it, but because I went with Thomas, and then I went to some more friends, and I have a lot of comments on that film, which we talked about on the last episode. I saw Baywatch, which I hated. I hated it so much, and I love The Rock. Everyone who knows me knows I love The Rock so much, and I was so upset with that film because it could have been really good, and it wasn't. I'm sorry if you liked it, but it was terrible. And I saw The Mummy with Tom Cruise, which is not as bad as Baywatch, but not that good either. And then I saw Wonder Woman twice in theaters, so there's that. So yeah, good stuff. So I think the person who's so we're going to talk about Wonder Woman tonight, so there will be spoilers, of course, and it's let calm down a little bit after it's been released, so hopefully a lot of people have seen it. I think Anna, you've probably seen it. You saw it the most recent.
Right? I saw it 4 days ago.
Okay, I haven't seen it like I think a week or more.
Okay,
so
but you guys have seen it, like you, Brandon, you've seen it twice.
I've seen it a couple times.
Will's seen it three times. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Will's also, you're a big comic book guy or DC guy.
Yes.
Comic book. I like this stuff. So that it makes sense. But Anna, what were your thoughts since you saw it the most recent afterwards?
As a non-comic book reader, really, and so yeah, take that. I don't know about any inaccuracies that people might have qualms with of the comic books versus the movie. Let me preface this by saying I don't usually get like hyped about the comic book movies as much. Like I'll usually go see them eventually and trickle into theaters, but this is the first time I've actually been like psyched and excited and counting down the days to see a comic book movie about a comic I don't even really know anything about. And I think that's really telling of what kind of movie is being made here. Female lead superhero movie directed by a woman. Like these are things that really matter. Representation really matters in film, and I obviously wanted to support that as much as I could. So ran to theater to see it, obviously later than everybody else. I've been very busy, as you all know. Yep. And I completely loved it. I think it falls short in some parts of the film, but for little things that I couldn't care less about in the grand scheme of things, just because I loved how it was constructed on the whole.
Yeah.
I kind of, to be honest, I want an entire Wonder Woman of just the first 20 minutes and extend that to 2 hours. That was the best part of the film for me, was just the island of Amazons. But I completely loved it. I don't know how much you want me to talk about the whole thing, or do you want to go around and give initial...
we'll go around and give initial thoughts, and then we'll come back to it. So Will, what were your thoughts on it?
I thought it was great. I think it's the best movie that DC has made since The Dark Knight. It's been 5 years and 3 superhero movies, and they finally made one that was decent. And not only just decent, but it's actually good. And not just in terms of what they did with the comics, but actually it's a good movie. I mean, it's a very good movie. I mean, that's why I went back and watched it. I mean, I saw it on Friday night after I got off of work by myself in IMAX 3D. I took my family back to see it the next day in IMAX 3D. I mean, like literally the next morning, like, the first showing I was able to get, I was like, you got to go see this movie. It's great. And because my mother, you know, isn't big into comic book movies or anything like that, but she really enjoyed it as well. And I was telling my dad, I was like, look, I know you hated Batman versus Superman like I did. You hated Man of Steel. Trust me, this is not those movies. And I think actually, Brandon, you put it probably better than a lot of other folks that I've heard talk about it, which was in a text message a few days ago, which was Zack Snyder's probably best decision. He's actually better as a producer than he has been as a director, that his decision to cast Gal Gadot as Diana was brilliant. I mean, because she is a revelation in this film. And they did a really nice job with it.
And also, to go off that, because I also said Affleck too as Batman has been another good decision. And Grant, that is like a directing decision as well. But with Gal Gadot being cast before, because basically what happened was she was cast for Batman vs. Superman. And so Patty Jenkins actually didn't have a say in who was cast as Wonder Woman, which you think she should have. But it was Snyder that had to make that call. And even Jenkins said, like, it was the best decision Like, no one else could have played this role. And I think with me, my big thought of Wonder Woman is I've like fallen in love with Gal Gadot as an actress from this movie because she's so charismatic. She just like lights up the screen when she's on there, and like very few actors really have that quality. Like there's certain people, like this is the difference between like great actors and then like movie stars. Movie stars are ones that no matter what they're doing on screen, you're going to gravitate towards them in some way. It's why people like Tom Cruise. It's why people like Will Smith, why people love Mel Gibson during his big run. There's just certain actors that I think even Julia Roberts is that way in her big run. You just look towards them no matter like who is on screen. That's the person that they're looking at. And I think Gal Gadot fits into that same model. I think she's that charismatic and that talented. And even I've started going back and finding movies that she was in before, because she's been kind of popping up in the Fast and the Furious stuff. Mm-hmm. She was just in a movie, Keeping Up with the Joneses, with John Hamm.
I actually quite liked that movie.
It wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't.
I just watched it a few days ago. But again, I think I love her and John Hamm together.
Oh yeah.
Like, I think that the story's not that great, but I think all four of those actors work really well together.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Gal's amazing in it. I think I love the time period of the film. I think that's one thing I talked about in an article, was that not all superhero films have to be like present day modern films, and they don't have to be focusing on like this big bad guy who's trying to end the world and or have complete power. And that kind of happens in Wonder Woman, but not as much as say X-Men Apocalypse, where X-Men Apocalypse, that's the entire plot, is that this person wants to destroy the Earth. And in Wonder Woman, that's really, her big thing is that she wants to kill the Ares, the god of war, who's not really trying to end the Earth or whatever. But yeah, I think the casting was great. I love the location. I love a lot of the technical aspects of the film as well. I love the overall look of it, production design-wise and cinematography. I also kind of want to talk about, in a way, the editing of the film, because Anna, did you notice anything with the editing of the film, Anna being an editor?
Notice anything with the editing of the film?
Well, the editing, the thing is, because when I watch a lot of big budget films, everyone tends to like overshoot a lot of their scenes, and it's very choppy editing, and Wonder Woman felt very fluid. Like, I noticed in a lot of even big scenes, there's not many shots in it, if that makes any sense. Like, they like, for example, with Beauty and the Beast, I think when I watch a movie a second time, I tend to like count shots and see how much is used in one certain scene. And like in a very short scene in Beauty and the Beast had like 25 different shots. Mm-hmm. But in a big important scene in Wonder Woman has like 6. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that's a testament to Patty Jenkins, that she knows where to put the camera and how to tell the story. And I think it's with cinematography and editing, but it's not something you see a lot in big budget films.
No.
Sorry.
It definitely makes it a more, I guess, cinematic epic when you've got those longer takes. And
yeah.
Especially with the scene breaching like No Man's Land, you see that a lot, I think, which could be a very quick action scene. You know, quick takes of gunfire and things like that. And there are moments of that, but a lot of it is just like this, like these insane wide shots of her resisting bullets. And it's just, I think it's, you're right, it's really powerful. I actually hadn't really thought about it while watching the movie, but now I think back on it, that's actually a really good point about Wonder Woman and editing.
Yeah, it's, because, and even like, I put this in one of my articles, I love the scene with them in the village after they've had the huge fight.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful scene. I love the opening shot where you have like all the lanterns on and everyone's out celebrating. It's like, it's one of the most beautiful shots I've seen in a studio film in a long time, because it feels like a painting. And it's a very well cut scene. I know a lot of people brought up the love, not really a love scene, but the scene that between Chris Pine and Gal Gadot before after the whole fight, it's like they're in the room together, and it's a very like very well done scene. It's not really a overly sexual scene. It's a very kind of the movie Wonder Woman's essentially a romance film surrounded, like, set at a war is what I kind of see it as. And that's something that Patty Jenkins and them didn't lose track of, except the third act with the big, huge battle. That's my one big thing, is that it gets kind of wonky to me in the final, like, big battle. But anyway, I'll stop talking. So what was y'all's favorite part of the film? That's a kind of big question, but I'm trying to get into more specific stuff. Anna, would you like to go first?
Sure. I'm trying to figure out whether I like No Man's Land scene best or the Amazon scene best. I mean, by Amazon scene, I mean the first 20 minutes of the film. I think probably the first... Okay, I'm going to go with the first 20 minutes of the film, because that opening scene of the Amazons practicing and wielding swords and being ruthless, and there was no men around, that felt amazingly cathartic to watch in a very strange way that I have not felt watching a movie in theaters before, because I just realized I've never really seen anything like that on a big screen of that caliber. And I think it was just shot so well, and the way you really do care about the Amazons and their strength and their prowess, and you understand what kinds of warriors they are. And I think that really sets up how you're going to perceive Diana for the whole film. These are the women that she's been surrounded by her entire life. She has never interacted with a man. She knows about men, but all of her influence comes from these strong women. And you kind of know that her whole story going through the film is going to be based upon these women, this core experience that she's had. And I think that focusing so long on that opening scene is just integral to understanding the rest of the film and how Diana's character is going to play out as being a ruthless woman but also, you know, these women, they're not beasts or anything. They're not evil people at all. They're pure of heart. They're good people. Mm-hmm. They want peace, that they fight, but with the hope that they don't have to fight one day. And I think that's, all of that shown in the first 20 minutes is just, it's so crucial, and it's beautifully shot. And I appreciate it so much. Like, I felt my heart sore a little bit when we came swooping down into that island. It was just incredible. You know, as a woman, I thought it was really wonderful.
Yeah. And then Robin Wright, Robin Wright's performance. Yeah.
Robin Wright. And you know what? I was really excited to see Connie Nielsen in that role as well, because, it took me like a few seconds to recognize her. And I was like, how do I know this woman and I know I love her. And then I was like, oh my God, Gladiator. And she's amazing in Gladiator. And that she basically plays this incredible role in Gladiator as well, of this like strong woman. You know, her father says, you know, you would have been the best Caesar there ever was, because put her against Commodus, her brother, played by Joaquin Phoenix. He's this like sniveling, kind of like scared man. And Connie Nielsen's character, I think her name was Lucilla. Is that right? I might be wrong on that. Sounds like that. She's just like this confident, incredible woman. But there's the annoying part about watching her character in that movie is that she doesn't really have much power. You know she's stronger. You know she's smarter. But she's always been repressed, especially by her brother and her father. But in this movie, seeing her in it wasn't Hippolyta. Yeah, Hippolyta, playing Queen Hippolyta, it was really great to see, because I saw the character she played 17 years earlier and didn't really get to be a total badass. And now she gets to be a total badass in kind of a similar role, I guess. I love her, and I love Robin Wright. Robin Wright was incredible as well. She's great in everything. Yeah. I want her to be in everything now. She is. She's a total badass. I love her.
So, Will, what were your favorite parts of the movie?
My favorite scene in the film...
Our favorite scene, yeah.
...is train station. When she gets Bison ice cream.
Yeah.
And the reason I love that, and this is one of the reasons why I absolutely adore this film, is that they allowed Wonder Woman not only to be a hero, unlike the boys in their movies, which they weren't really heroes. I'm going to try and avoid talking about their movies so I can talk about her. Yeah. But that she also gets to be a woman. She gets to be a girl, and she embraces her femininity in a way. Like, she hasn't experienced ice cream before, and it's just this wonderful experience for her. And
well, that's a human quality. That's a human quality.
Yes, absolutely. But female. Do you see many dudes just like, oh my God, this ice cream's amazing? What I'm saying by that is they allow her to embrace her femininity. And yeah. When she spends the moment in walking through London, when she sees a baby for the first time, there aren't any babies on Themyscira. She's never seen a baby in person. She stops to coo at a baby. I loved that. It's the little things, and Godot sells it beautifully. She gets to be a girl. They don't allow many times. I think when we talk about strong female characters, we compare them in their strengths to how do they compare to the physicality and the powers of men or the agency of men. And that's fine to a degree, but at the same time, that we lose what makes them actually female and actually makes them women. And I believe that Wonder Woman allows you to actually be that sort of that ultimate ideal of a woman. She's not only powerful and stronger than every man in that film, but she's also still very much a woman, which was great to see. I compare that to characters like Buffy the Vampire Slayer with Joss Whedon, that Buffy is the superhero of that story. Buffy is incredibly powerful and incredibly strong, but she still goes through life as a young woman. She still has her own problems that she deals with as a woman, being second-guessed constantly by some of the guys around her, also dealing with romance and life and love. She gets to go through those things. And so I was glad that they allowed Wonder Woman to be an actual person and to be a woman in the film, and not just sort of being a stoic sort of, oh, I'm superpowered like Superman and Batman, and I'm doing what they should have been doing all along. Yes, she does what they should have been doing all along, but she also gets to be her own person, and they treat her as they should have. She got to be an actual woman, and I loved that. And actually, that scene in the train with the ice cream cone is actually straight from the comics as well, which is a very nice little touch. Where one of the first things she experiences in man's world, it's the little miracles, right? Sort of as terrible as man's world can be, it's the little things that she can find joy and pleasure from, and one of those things was a cone of ice cream. And so that was my favorite personal scene. In terms of overall, though, I love the fact that it's actually an anti-war film hidden in the middle of a superhero flick, and that entire sequence with her. Going through the setup again, transitioning from the second act and the third act, leaving London and going to the front, is incredibly smartly done. Incredibly smartly, I don't think that's a great turn of phrase there, sorry. But it's very well done that she sees the wounded, she sees what war does to people, and then she does to the men that are fighting it first. And then they transition into, you see what war does to nature. You see what it does to the landscape. You see what it does to the animals. You see what war does to women. You see what war does to children. It's destructive. It's awful. It's a horrific thing. And she is deeply and profoundly affected by this. Why can't we stop? I can help. I can do something. No, we can't. We have to stay with the mission. And when she finally has the heroic moment of crossing no man's land, it's such a beautifully shot, just from visual symbolism of this is what heroes do. She crosses no man's land to save a village that has been occupied and enslaved by Germans when no one else would do it because that wasn't the mission, but she did it because she could do it, number one, and she did it because it was the right thing to do, and number three, she did it because that was her mission in life to do. She chose to do it. You know, that you said, you know, that's not your mission, but this is something I'm going to do. And it's a it's a brilliant thing. She got to be a hero. And so they understood Wonder Woman as a character, and they allowed her to grow as a character. You start off as this sort of, I'm not going to say naive. She's not naive. She's very intelligent. But she does not understand the nuances and complexities of man's world in the 20th century. She doesn't understand the darkness that sometimes lies within all of us. And she has a simple joy of life, and then she gets to sort of see, and she learns, and she grows. How many times have we seen, really, in recent superhero films, where the hero actually grows and has a greater understanding of the world around them by the time the film starts, the time it concludes? I can't really think of one since Iron Man, the first one. And so that's what I loved about this film. Thor is a questionable situation where I don't think he actually learned anything, because you go to the next film, he's doing the exact same stuff he's doing, but he's just not as braggadocious about it.
That's fair. I actually can't remember anything about the second movie to dispute that, because I found it so boring. So I'll let you have that one.
Tangent, but Thor is my least favorite like series out of the Marvel, the MCU. Anyway. No, I think one big thing too with Wonder Woman and then with Diana's character, they make her human, which is a big problem with a lot of superhero films. Is that like that's what's so hard about Superman is that how do you tackle a person that's essentially a god is unstoppable, and I think Wonder Woman did it in a beautiful way. Is that they found a way to make her a human and not a god, and I think with Man of Steel, they tried to make Superman not a god, but an alien and how he was viewed. And I think Wonder Woman took how it's difficult to adapt a character of that nature, and they pulled it off by giving her human characteristics and being this kind of outsider who doesn't understand the world and what it is. And she questions it and basically says, this is the way it should be. And try to get my thoughts together. A scene example, I think someone pointed out, was the scene when the house or the when they're doing the treaty or whatever, when they're trying to talk about having a treaty with Germany, mm-hmm. and Chris Pine's character tells her to stay out there, and she just walks on in, and it's saying, I think someone said, like, it's showing that when she does that, I can't remember if it might be a friend of mine that said this on their Facebook post, and if you're listening, no, I'm talking about you, is that she walked into it not thinking about it, because where she's from, she deserves to be there, because there's no difference between a man and a woman, and it's a very subtle thing, and that's what I think is so good with what they do in the film, and I don't know if it's in the script or if it's Patty Jenkins or whatever, is the subtle things of showing that the character of Diana, and in a way, female characters, when it comes to big budget stuff, they have a right to be there just as much as the male characters do, and there shouldn't be a difference between them, if that makes sense.
To build off of that a little bit, the great thing they did, and again, I give them full praise for this, is that they respected the character and understood her. To sort of talk about your comparison with Superman there, Wonder Woman has always sort of been a fish out of water. At least in the comics, where she's never really fit into man's world because she's not of it, right? She tries to understand it as best she can, but mostly her knowledge is essentially academic. It's book knowledge. You know, she knows every language ever spoken or written by people, but she doesn't understand normal people. She doesn't understand what we are like, and that she's entering our world. Superman, in sort of a similar way, is an alien, but he was born and raised in our world. You know, that's the distinction between the two. And they respected the character enough to allow her to be who she is. That she is a stranger in this land, and so we get to experience what does our world look like, literally from someone that looks like they belong, but also at the same time totally doesn't belong, right? When she spends half the movie, when she's walking through London, covered in a cloak, right? And she's got her armor on underneath. And everyone's like, you can't wear that out in public. You know, that doesn't fit, that people would stare, you know? And anything you can think of gets thrown into there. But she literally is the person that we get to literally see our world from. And so in a way, Wonder Woman as a movie isn't just about this great and fantastic superhero and this fantastic person they created, but it's also a movie about essentially mankind itself, right, as us. It's telling us a lot about our own society, which is what's genius about when you do superhero stories right. It's not just telling adventure stories, it's telling us something about ourselves. And they told us, I believe, a lot with Wonder Woman, that the petty put-downs and insults that she's received by the generals in that scene in the boardroom, or in the cat calling on the street, and she doesn't understand what's going on, and Steve's like, okay. And that's why the Steve Trevor character is so also crucial to this movie, which I was glad they did, was it's that bridge between, all right, we see how nasty and awful mankind can be, but then you have that we're not all the same way, right? Just as not all women are Wonder Woman and not all Amazons are Wonder Woman. They don't all make the decision to go save the world. She is the one that makes the decision. At the same time, Steve Trevor is the one that makes a decision to be a hero as well. And so it's a brilliant mode of storytelling that it's telling us a lot about who we are as people, that we do have choices and that we can be heroic even if we have powers or not. And that's something that Batman and Superman have not done in any of their last couple of movies. And which was one of the things I was so happy about. They understood what makes superheroes cool and why they're inspiring and empowering figures, not because of what they do, but because of what they can say about us.
Mm-hmm. So a different question. What was your least favorite part about the movie? First, let me say my favorite parts, because I don't think I said. Oh, I said it already. The scene. I love the scene. After they fight in the village, or really the whole village stuff in general that they do, because I think it's a well done scene action wise. And to kind of go off what we've been talking about and going against kind of like stereotypes in film of how usually it's like the man telling the woman to wait right here and the man goes in. With that scene when she raids the village, she tells all the guys, wait right here, and she runs in and they go,
yes,
okay. Like, they realize, we're not as good as this. Yes. We're going to stay back for a bit because she knows what she's doing and we sure as hell don't.
Yes.
And the thing is, too, I don't want to make a comparison to this. Also, the fight scene she has when she goes into the village in the top of, the building or whatever, mm-hmm. when she's, like, fighting all the German soldiers, it's very reminiscent. This is one thing with the DC universe that... there are some kind of similar things between Batman versus Superman and this one. And the fight that she has with the German soldiers in the building is very similar to the fight that Batman has when rescuing Martha, and which is the best scene in the movie of that one. But then I love the whole other callback to when Chris Pine yells to her shield and helps her go up and knock out the sniper, which is a callback to him watching the Amazon women on the island and seeing how they learn, how they interact and how they do things, is that Chris Pine was learning from them all the way back then and then using it as a way to become a better person, but also become a better fighter, all these different things. Because I think that's the thing about Chris Pine that you see with Chris Pine's character throughout the movie is he learns a lot from Diana and her culture, and how he talks about earlier that he fought in the war because it was either fight in the war or do nothing, and he tried nothing, so he just decided to fight in the war. And then he has the choice at the end to make a decision either to sacrifice himself to save the war or to win the war and then lose what he has with Diana. But he realizes, like he says, I can save today, you can save the world, is that he knows by sacrificing himself he's giving her a place to do the change, or to promote and create the change that he knows she can create, if that makes sense. Yeah, the whole village stuff is my favorite stuff. The fight in the village and then the after party afterwards. But yeah, sorry. So your least favorite part, Anna, you're about to say something before I interjected.
I didn't feel very convinced by the final act of the film. I think that the whole Ares thing wasn't really developed very well.
Yeah.
And so the payoff wasn't really that great when she, you know, defeats Ares. I like the moral of the story when she says, "Well, why hasn't everybody stopped fighting?" And she knows, you know, she has a lot of work to do, and it's not just about defeating the god of war that'll end war. I like all that. I really don't think they developed Ares enough for him to be an actual palpable character that we would actually care about her really defeating. It didn't really feel like there was much weight on that. It was a well done battle scene, but ultimately, you'd think that the third act battle scene would be more like the No Man's Land scene in the second act, which was epic and beautiful and, you know, exhilarating. And the final battle just in the third act, just it fell flat for me. It just felt like every other superhero action movie. I didn't care at all about Remus Lupin dying or anything. I do have one small qualm that just, it made me so mad watching the movie, and I couldn't stop laughing in theaters because I was just so irritated at my housemate who I was watching it with was like giving me side eye, like, stop it, you're embarrassing. And it's those fucking German accents. I can't handle it. I could not handle it. I went into hysterics whenever Chris Pine started speaking in a German accent to other real Germans. They were all just at a party with German people all speaking in German accents, and Chris Pine's convincing enough with his German accent to convince real Germans that he's German, and like, God, I wish they had just done subtitles. I really do. I just think it was just horrible. And I get it. It's a DC movie. It's a superhero movie. You know, don't want any foreign languages being all weirding up your American movie or anything. But, God, it just made me think of, like, Inglourious Basterds or something, you know? Uh-huh. Imagine if they had done the bar scene in the basement with This Is the German 3. And imagine if they'd done that scene completely in English with German accents.
Yeah.
Like, I don't – maybe I'm just – I don't know, because I asked people about it afterwards, and no one really seemed to be that bothered by it. But watching the film, I was just livid. And I was going back and forth between being livid and laughing at really inappropriate times. Also laughing very inappropriately all the time at the German poison gas doctor, who I also couldn't care less about. She wasn't very compelling at all. Basically anything that wasn't Wonder Woman and Chris Pine. I just didn't like the German side of things. I'm just going to be real. I just thought it was underdeveloped. Same with Ares. I just didn't like the third act. I'll just leave it at that.
No, someone commented on my post of when I did the article on Wonder Woman. His comment, David Miller, I don't think he listens, but he was like, and accents were terrible, especially for anyone in Germany. Would have much preferred German dialogue and subtitles to really illustrate World War One.
Who is this man, and how can I go find him and talk to him?
He was a friend of mine. He worked with me in Alabama. He still works there. But yeah, that was his. He says my only thing is that the characters, like, he goes, casting for the characters who weren't on the island were not that great, and the accents were terrible, especially for anyone in Germany.
Well, even the guy who played the German general, the Ludendorff.
Danny Houston.
Danny Houston, that's his name.
Who is also William Stryker in X-Men Origins.
God, I could have done without him. There's nothing compelling about his character at all. I don't know him very well as an actor, to be honest. But
he's a solid actor.
Is he?
Character actor.
I need some more evidence of that.
Well,
but yeah, I agree with your friend. I just wish, and I know it's a small thing, but it's like one of those things that's like a grain of sand that just like ruins everything. It doesn't ruin everything for me, but it's just like in the moment, I totally lost it. And Chris Pine, who I'd been like massively enjoying up until that point, I just, I looked at him and he looked silly. He just looked like an idiot speaking with a German accent to real German people who were eating it up. Like, yes, this man's German. We're at a German party. This man is absolutely German. I'm going to tell him some secrets and stuff.
That's fair. Will?
My thing I disliked the most of the film, and I actually have an answer to your questions and problems with Ares, I think, that maybe or maybe not convince you. But the thing I disliked the most was their treatment of General Ludendorff as a history major in background.
Okay.
General Ludendorff is bald. General Ludendorff is also responsible for the rise of Hitler.
And he's German.
And he's dead in this movie. Spoiler alert, at the end, he dies. She kills him. And which I was just sort of like the entire time, I was like, all right, he has hair. He's willing to shoot his own troops. And again, they're doing having fun with the comic world, which is then becomes the joke. Well, people are like, well, why didn't she stop World War II? Well, we don't know if World War II happened in this universe because apparently Wonder Woman shows up in World War I and kills General Ludendorff apparently by herself. And anyway, that was my minor complaint with the film. Was I didn't like how they treated Ludendorff as a historical figure. That they
could have. to preface that, because I don't know if everyone knows this, he's a real human being.
Yes.
He was a real person in World War One, and did not die until 1937.
Yes.
Like, that was, they used a real historical figure and put it into the story, which they don't, not everyone does a lot. And it's weird seeing it as a villain of a superhero movie is actually a real person.
And I thought for a moment there when they said this is General Ludendorff, like, I immediately went, that's not General Ludendorff. He doesn't look anything like him. He doesn't act anything like him. You know, at the meeting, immediately it's like, oh, it's just, you know, it was too obvious, you know, that he's not Ares, but at the same time that maybe they're being clever. Maybe they're actually going to say that this is Ares impersonating Ludendorff and that, like, he's like locked up in a house somewhere under like magic spells. I don't know. But to answer, I think, Anna, in terms of your complaints with Ares being built up as a character, that he's not built up at all, I think that's the point. That's the point of the movie, is that her point of her mission, she thinks, is to defeat this big bad influence. But what she discovers is that it's not just this one entity, right? This entity is basically pointless and meaningless. The god of war, the embodiment of war, which she defeats, she literally defeats war in its own embodiment, in a war, in the war to end all wars. I mean, the symbolism of that is brilliant from the screenwriting perspective, but with the character isn't built up, and I believe that's intentional, because when she finally faces him, and she has that sort of tete-a-tete at first when he reveals himself, and what is he revealed to be? He's revealed to be this sort of kindly British politician that wants to have peace, apparently, you know, and he's, you know, he has these very dark nihilistic views of mankind. And so the reveal is sort of like, oh, okay, that guy is Ares. But think about that, the god of war in this mythology, who you think would be this huge massive force, actually isn't. That the focus of the film isn't on, look at these incredible powerful characters, but look at what I think they're doing with the story there, is that Ares, without being this big titanic force, comes back to being that it's not that important to destroy the god of war. The important thing is to be that symbol, right? That she is, and she understands, and she has the option to be, and she sees Steve Trevor make the decision that you can be better than this. It's not some evil person's influence on you. That's why Ares himself seems like he doesn't feel like a threat at the end of the film, because really he isn't a threat. Because at the end of the day, it's not about what Ares is doing. It's about what we are doing. It's about what she is doing. Her mission is to ultimately destroy war, which then one could argue then that maybe in this universe that her efforts by killing Ludendorff and defeating Ares prevented World War II. We don't know. That she literally kills war, and it's the personification of it. And so I think in that sense that I think it was intentional that they didn't try to build Ares up into being bigger than he actually was, or to try to develop him further.
No, I...
Go ahead, Anna.
I appreciate the symbolism of it. And I don't mind, Ares and her defeating him. And I like the message that comes about from that battle. My qualm was really just with how they gradually introduced Ares as a character and how they brought him in at the end and how they revealed him. And I almost, now that I'm thinking about it, I would almost prefer that she has no battle with Ares, that Ares isn't really a character that she physically even fights. I would prefer not even to see a final battle. I would just like her to kill Ludendorff and have a realization on her own about humanity and war, and just strive to keep the peace in this human world, knowing she can't defeat Ares or hasn't defeated him yet, or maybe he comes up later and you can develop a bit more. I just felt very unsatisfied watching the reveal of Ares and the defeat of Ares.
But do you sacrifice Trevor then in that version if there is no Ares? Do you because the Steve Trevor sacrifice is one of the key linchpins of the story, is he is that connection to her, the actual, you know, personal connection to her in Man's World.
Right.
And his sacrifice that she is able to see that there is some good within men, right, that they just have to choose to be good.
Well, you can still sacrifice him. I mean, there's still there's still a bunch of stuff that's about to explode and kill everybody.
Sure.
He still has to go up in the plane and destroy it all. But I didn't really feel anything. I love the message that defeating Ares gave, but I think it could have been accomplished in other ways. It didn't necessarily need this big fancy battle that really didn't, I just found it very unsatisfying. Brandon, you seem to have something to say about it. Go ahead.
No, I do. Cause I don't know how you could fix it. I'm not getting paid for it, so I can't tell you. But I do have problems with it because I do agree with Anna. Basically what Will you're saying is what meant to be, and you're right with that. But that doesn't really come across as much in the film. And so my thing was I kind of thought Ares was just going to be like not real because there was never really hints of another being. Granted, she is a god herself, so you would think we should already know that there could be a god out there, but we kind of just don't, we kind of have to be reminded of that, if that makes sense, of this other being kind of dealing the cards. And it came out very weird when you find out David Thewlis, I can't remember how to pronounce his last name, but who plays the British politician and then is Ares. He goes into the whole villain speech at the end of why he did this, why he does this, and how the world's become this, which is like you see that a lot, and it feels kind of...
It's a trope, absolutely.
It's a trope, but it's kind of unsatisfying. And I don't know how you could fix it, but I think they could have planted it more early on in some way because it felt like he wasn't going to pop up. And then when he pops up, it kind of feels, after watching it a second time, kind of just doesn't make sense. Of why this character who's trying to do a peace treaty is the one who's also promoting war. And granted, that's a part of the character. It's in the speech. I get that. But it just feels a little off to me. Granted, I don't know how you change it. I think what makes the movie work, especially at the end, because I do think the Act 3 is what goes crazy, is the sacrifice of Steve Trevor. And that's what kind of holds it together a little bit, is because it's such a... Most superhero films don't do that. They don't make that sacrifice to kill off your second most important character in a series or in your film. And I think it's a very beautiful moment. And because that's why I say the movie's a love story, is that it starts and begins with her, with the picture of Steve Trevor in Paris. And what she writes back to Bruce Wayne is, "Thank you for bringing him back to me." It's all about her journey with Steve Trevor falling in love and showing that sometimes you have to give up what you love to better the other person or whatever. I think that's the story. And because of that, that holds that third act together, I think. But it could have been done better. It could have been done a different way. And I don't know how it could have been done a different way. It needed to have more hints of Ares. Because the whole thing of like the whole reveal that Diana and Wonder Woman is the God Killer, it wasn't a surprise. Like, I figure that I think that's hinted at very early on that she is actually the God Killer, but it's supposed to be this big twist at the end when he tells her she's the God Killer. Does that make sense? Like, I wasn't shocked by that at all. Like, and I think that's one thing you had to be aware of, is that if the audience knows more than you, then you're kind of screwed. And in that moment, I think that's what the audience was way ahead of. I think most people were. Maybe it was just me. I don't know. I think the audience was ahead of the movie. They knew Wonder Woman was the God Killer. There was no surprise when he said that to
right.
her. So that whole thing could have been worked out differently. The whole planting it of her being the God Killer and then Ares, it just felt kind of all just felt weird and didn't feel very put together. And I think if that would have been done better earlier on, the ending would have worked better.
I looked at that as sort of a meta-theatrical moment, too. A little bit of meta-commentary there. Because I think the key line from the film, in terms of meta-theater, is they do not deserve you. And because in the grander scheme of the universe, the DC universe did not deserve a movie or a hero like Diana in its current state. And on top of that, as the God Killer, I mean, basically all of the joke with... sort of the difference between Marvel's heroes and DC's is that DC's heroes are all practically gods in one form or fashion, and DC and Marvel's are all pretty much regular people that get powers at one day. But most of DC's big folks are literal titanic powered people. Even Batman, you know, he may be super rich, but he's all, you know, he's always got a plan. He's always got always his backup. He's always prepared. I mean, that they are practically gods in many ways. And so I sort of read it, and again, this just depends on how you want to read the film. And one of the things I read the film as sort of with the God Killer thing, not just from a plot standpoint, but it was, oh, well, I see what they're doing here. They're also sort of saying at the end of the day that she is literally killing the standard of what we thought of for these DC superhero films and what a superhero is supposed to be doing in these movies as well. It's just a way I read it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I don't know if that's what they meant to do.
No.
I think that's fine the way you read it. Also, too, Wonder Woman's basically, I'm going to break it down this simple. It's Superman, the original Superman, Richard Donner's version, mixed with Captain America, mm-hmm. the first Avenger. That's basically the movie. It's like, it does the whole, like, Jesus thing that Superman does with, like, Brand in the Superman movie when Brando says, I gave them you, my only son, which is this whole Jesus thing. And in a way, that's a similar speech that Diana's mother gives to her of they don't deserve you. It's the same. It's very similar speech to me. Is that you're? I mean, I'm giving you to them in some way. I'm letting you go, but do know like it's gonna be trouble. They're gonna be hard to. I think even Brando says they mean. It's a different thing, but it's a very similar speech. Brando says they mean well, but it's going to be difficult or whatever. And that's what I think Wonder Woman tries to prove and Superman tries to prove is that, and the original one, is that the humans are humans can be ruthless and cutthroat and dark and terrible people, but there's also good in them in some way. And I think that's what the ending kind of shows. Anyway, so you guys can talk about how much you guys love Chris Pine before we end it.
Yes, please. Go ahead, Anna.
The best Chris.
Yes.
I don't know. I have a feeling you guys have a lot more love feelings about this Chris thing.
I certainly do.
Well, why don't you go first, and then I'll come in with my Chris thoughts. I'll let you set the stage.
Yeah.
Chris Pine, and I know I've sound like a broken record now at this point on the podcast. I've said this at least 3, maybe 4 times now. In the history of the show, Chris Pine is not nearly as big of a movie star as he needs to be, or as he deserves to be. Chris Pine is a fantastic actor. He's done everything, and from Disney films to holding his own sort of massive franchises. But everyone seems to forget about Chris Pine when you mention the sort of the Hollywood leading men, so to speak. But this film, I think Chris Pine is at some of his best work that he's done in a long, long time. He's given a role that in anyone else's... Well, let's just take the other Chris's that he gets compared with. Put Chris Hemsworth or any of the other Chris's, even Chris Pratt, in the role of Steve Trevor. This doesn't work.
Chris Evans.
And Chris Evans as well. Even Chris Evans as Captain America, I don't think could have pulled this off. That Steve Trevor as a character is fairly loosely written, but in terms of, you know, he doesn't get a lot to quote-unquote do in terms of developing the story, but he is the linchpin of the story in terms of developing the character. And so he plays that sort of almost like Fredo to the Wonder Woman's Michael, and so to speak. Like, he is the weaker of the two, of the pair, but he is central to the story. And he plays it so delicately. Like he's a man, but he understands that he's not in control, but he knows how to play. He knows how to play that game, right? Like, there is that sort of the reversal of what's called your ultimate ideals of gender stereotypes and gender roles, which is that men get to do what they want and women have to sort of be coy and sly in getting what they want to do. Well, in this movie, Diana does whatever the heck she wants, and Steve has to like lie and trick people and sort of be passive in the film. And so that's both a brilliant way for him to even bring that across. It's also great writing. But he brings that great human nature to the film. Those two characters together, like, I would watch rom-coms with Gal Gadot and Chris Pine forever. Because their chemistry together was great. Even though he is weaker in physically and with agency, there is that sort of that, like you said, Brandon, that romance, that sort of dance back and forth, where there are moments where he leads and she follows, and there are moments where she leads and he follows. I mean, there is that brilliant interplay there. And I mean, and he does it very, very well. He brought a lot more to the character than the character probably deserved ultimately as well. Like, we didn't deserve Wonder Woman in terms of how good it was, and we also didn't deserve how great Steve Trevor and Chris Pine was. He played that role perfectly.
Is Steve Trevor an actual comic book character?
Yes.
Or okay, I wasn't for sure.
And depending on which version you read, Steve Trevor was World War II spy, not World War I. And he's still alive and an old man. She goes and visits him sometimes, and like in various incarnations of visits him in his nursing homes. He's done that before in some.
I can tell you they probably changed that because of Captain America.
Maybe
because Captain America takes place in World War II. And Peggy Carter survives, and Captain America goes and visits Peggy Carter when she's older in a nursing home, or in her home. So I think that's probably why I changed that, and I think it worked better. Anna, your thoughts on Chris Pine?
I like that we're talking about how Chris Pine is his character in relation to Diana's, and his role basically serving Diana and letting her kind of do her own thing. And I think this is a great lesson for future superhero movies with male leads. That is how we want to see the girlfriend or the love interest played by women against men. Chris Pine is given a lot of depth and agency, and he's wonderful, and I love it, but it just reminded me how you never see that in the female characters, the women characters, up against leading men. So this is a really good reminder that we love Chris Pine's role, we love what he does. Let's see it in women. You know, let's not have just your regular Pepper Pottses and your other chicks, the Jane Fosters. Let's have a little more agency. I do love Chris Pine. As we were talking, it actually reminded me of one of Chris Pine's first movies,
Princess Diaries 2,
which is kind of a similar role, you know.
Mia
Thermopolis, a princess, choosing her suitor. And at the end, she denounces that she needs a man in her life to be queen. She's just going to be queen by herself, and she's a badass lady, you know, just navigating Genovia. And she just happens to have Chris Pine on her side, and I think this is great. It's like bookending, like if this
comes
is the last thing that Chris Pine does, it's like full circle. Your first thing is this great, you know, supporting of Mia Thermopolis, and then you support Wonder Woman. Like, Chris Pine's the best supporter. I love Chris Pine. I think I think he's got this quality that just you can't help but like him. It's kind of like this, like, he's definitely handsome, but he's not aggressively handsome like Chris Hemsworth is or anything. He's got this very human look to him, this rugged human quality, I guess, that makes you kind of like him. He's got this charismatic twinkle in his eye. He's like a little bit goofy, and that's why he worked so well, you know, as Captain Kirk. You know, the things we love about the Shat came through. And we're even better, because let's be real, William Shatner is not that great of an actor at all. But Chris Pine took those qualities we enjoyed about William Shatner, and he really gave it new life. Are you disagreeing with me, Will, on the fact that William Shatner's a bad actor?
Have you seen
you
The Twilight Zone?
You look disgruntled. Have I seen what?
The Twilight Zone?
Yes, you mean the one episode in the plane with William Shatner?
He's had several episodes. He also had the one in the diner with the fortune telling thing.
I haven't seen that one.
Moving on.
Sorry,
I love Chris Pine. Okay,
But
Brandon, what are your thoughts on Chris Pine?
I loved your point though, Anna, about allowing, because the secondary characters to shine, right, and to have agents do their own thing, and that was what was so great, is that even the sidekick got to be a hero in this movie.
Totally.
You know?
And even the crew, you know, the we haven't even mentioned them. I mean, we've got so much we can talk about with Wonder Woman, but just like the supplementary crew, they all had these great stories. Each person was unique and had their own battles they were fighting, and they each made you care about each person in that crew, which is pretty, I think, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Considering you've got Wonder Woman and Chris Pine next to each other, and then you care about these other four guys who are helping them out.
And he connects them. He brings them together, but she's the one that convinces them to go. Like, they believe in her, right? That's their entire... It's so good.
And she's empathetic to each one of their struggles. Each one of them.
Yes.
She understands them on such a beautiful human level that Chris Pine has clearly never touched before, and I think that's just... I love it.
Yeah, because it's just they're a bunch of bros hanging out. And Chris Pine never really looked at what they're doing. And Diana has moments with each of them, with the conversation with Chief. Is it Chief? Is that the character's name?
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong? Okay.
No, it's Chief.
Okay, with Chief, the night when she's like, when he says, oh, we were taken out by the last war. And she goes, "What? Or who did it?" He's like, his people. And so he has that moment, and the whole moment of like the other one wanting to be an actor. And then the whole thing of the Scottish guy who never sings, but all of a sudden starts singing again and starts having more life in him, and kind of learn, like, all of them become kind of better human beings.
She's transformative.
She's made them better. She's made them better people. And it's not all, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's not all about the money. It's that they learn from her of, like, after the whole no man's land part, is that he's like, you guys can leave. And they're like, kind of like, well, screw it. Let's go do this. Like, let's save the war, or let's end the war. And it's like money or risk your life to save the war. And by working with her and being with her, they've learned they can do that. They have the ability to do that. But yeah, I think what works is it's a very dual role movie with Gal Gadot and then Chris Pine, and Chris Pine goes off of Gal Gadot. It's her movie, and then Chris Pine's secondary character. And it is a good point when it comes to future movies, because when you look at the male superhero movies, you don't really see that. I mean, even going back to Nolan's Batman, Rachel Dawes is not that big of a character in the first two movies.
No.
And really, I mean, you might could argue Dark Knight Rises with Anne Hathaway, but I haven't seen it in a while to argue it. But yeah, there's not many out there that have such a dual role with the male and female leads of the movie. And so I think, but yeah, Chris Pine he's very charismatic. He's dashing. That's the
totally.
Word. He's a very dashing human being.
Yeah.
And he has great comedic timing. And like Will, like you said about like, you would love to watch romantic comedy with Gal Gadot and Chris Pine. I think someone tweeted that was like, when you watch their chemistry together, cause it's really wonderful. It's like, that's why you want Hollywood to make more romantic comedies, to see them two in it together. Because they have such great chemistry.
Yes.
But yeah, I think it's, I really love Pine in the role. And I think he's great in all this stuff. He's the best part of Into the Woods.
Yes.
If you've seen that movie, he's the best part of that movie.
Yes.
I think he's great in Wet Hot American Summer, the prequel series. I think he's phenomenal in that. He's great in these like kind of crazy character roles, but he's also a great leading man. He can kind of play anything. But yeah, so last question before we end it. What do you want to see for the future of Wonder Woman and like the franchise, but also Justice League and all that stuff? Who wants to go first?
I'll start. I hope that the folks at Warner Brothers and with their DC imprint will take what people liked about this movie and what we loved about it, and everything we just said are the reasons why you enjoyed this movie. And I think the reasons that what's also not being said is that the reasons we didn't like those other DC movies is because they did not respect the characters. They did not do a great job of developing them. They didn't get to be heroes. Their stories weren't very good. They didn't make us care about the characters within their own movie. If you went in as a Batman fan, then you might like the movie. But if you went in not caring about Batman, you didn't care about Batman at the end of Batman versus Superman. If you went in not caring about Superman at the beginning of Man of Steel, you certainly didn't care about him by the end of the movie. But they made you care about Wonder Woman. And so one of the things I hope that they learn from this is that treat your characters with some respect. Like you're talking about a medium that has over 100 years worth of publications and stories that people have poured blood, sweat, and tears and their lives into, and that people have consumed and love, that there's reasons why people love them. And if you can identify what those reasons are and try to build those things to actual life and respect them in such a way, I think you'll win the respect and love and adoration of the quote-unquote fans that everyone always talks about making bad movies for. That if you do that and then create actual stories that have some meaning and resonance behind them, I think that they could possibly turn this DCU around. So I really hope that Wonder Woman... I was quietly optimistic, had my fingers crossed the entire time in the lead-up to this movie. With all its marketing and everything was very sort of understated. But I'm glad, though, that it paid off in a big way. I think this is the most successful thing they've done in a long time. And I hope that they are willing to, in future, if they do more solo stories with their other heroes, understand that the reasons we love Wonder Woman and the reasons we love this character are because they treated the character well, they had great performances, and they treated them with respect. And they treated us as an audience with respect as well.
Well, Anna? You said it very well there, Will. I pretty much agree with all that. I don't really have any specific wants for future DC things, except for what's happening in the offices in Hollywood and getting more women to direct the things. I mean, I know I'm kind of beating that to death in this podcast, but it's insanely important. And not because Wonder Woman is better because it was directed by a woman or better for whatever. It's literally just being like, you know what? We'll give this woman $150 million to make this movie. It's going to be great. And it's about giving women the opportunities that they should always be having that they're not having.
Yeah.
There's this, like, I think I've talked about this before, this misconception that women just aren't going to film school or aren't coming out of film school or interested in these things. That's not true. It's actually very equal, the number of women and men who go to film school or who want to be involved in film this way, especially directors. Yeah. And it's literally just opportunity. That's it. It's people giving people opportunities. And they took a pretty big risk, I mean, with Patty Jenkins. I mean, all she directed really before feature-wise was Monster, I believe.
Yeah,
And I'm not sure about any other features, but I think that might have been the only one.
I think that's it.
And holy shit, did it ever pay off? Yeah, and TV stuff. So I would just hope they let her keep handling that universe and handing it off, handing these big budgets over to other women who deserve it and give more women a chance. I also, with like Will, hope that they'll stick with the sincerity that I really enjoyed with Wonder Woman. I think it was beautifully sincere. So
yeah, and the rumor right now is that they're doing reshoots. They're already planning doing reshoots for Justice League, but the rumor is that they're trying to amp up Wonder Woman's character and her importance in the film after this movie's been released. So we'll see how that goes. I think, going off of that, it's a big... I wanted to write an article about this, but I'm probably not. I'll just say it here in the podcast. It's a very big deal for Patty Jenkins to be the director for the second one, because they haven't... She's still... They just started negotiations, I think, for her to return for the second film. And why that's a big deal is because this was the first time a woman directed a... Well, no. First time a woman directed a superhero film, and probably the third time, I think is what it is, that woman directed a movie that was over $100 million. There hasn't been a series where a woman directed a movie and then directed the sequel to it. Because I remember, this is a different type of movie, but I had a professor bring up 50 Shades of Grey and how the first movie was directed by a female director. It's, I'm blanking on Taylor Johnson, is Sam Taylor Johnson. She did Nowhere Boy, and she's married to Aaron Taylor Johnson.
That's right.
It was before 50 Shades of Grey came out, but my professor said it'll be interesting to see what happens after this movie, because this is the first time that a female director has gotten the chance to helm a female focused series. It's the main character's a female. It's the first time a female director. When you look at all these other female franchises, Twilight was never directed by a female director. Hunger Games was never directed by a female director. So 50 Shades of Grey was the first time that was kind of happening. And then after the first one came out, they fired her and hired a male to direct the last two sequels. So it's a big deal because this will be the first time that the same director as a female comes in and directs a sequel. I think the only other one that I know of where a female directed the sequel was Pitch Perfect, and that was Elizabeth Banks. Yeah. And they've already changed directors for the next one. So that's a big deal, and I think it should. And that's the thing, is that Patty Jenkins had so much pressure on her for this movie, is that if that movie would have failed, you know, someone in Hollywood would have been, or some studio exec would go, well, we put a female director in the chair for this movie. It didn't pan out. We don't need to do that again. Like, they would have kept going with the whole stereotype, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If Wonder Woman would have failed critically and or commercially. And that's a lot of pressure for someone to be under. And I think Patty Jenkins did it beautifully and handled it beautifully and made a really good movie. And it's a blockbuster that I wish people made more of. Mm-hmm. Is that I see a lot of blockbusters that are terrible, and the big thing that it had a lot of heart to it, and a lot of films don't have that. And it's a character we cared about, it's in turn an actress and an actor that we cared about. And we cared what happened to him. And like Will said, I didn't feel that with Batman vs. Superman. I didn't feel it with Batman or Superman. I haven't felt any of that in a while, maybe besides Guardians. So yeah, that's what I hope Hollywood, not just with superhero films, but in films all around, they continue to do or can learn from this movie. But yeah, I think that's it. So off that, what are y'all's recommendations for our listeners?
Under the recommendation of you boys again, I've started reading the Thrawn series, the Star Wars books.
Uh-huh.
Very, very much enjoying those. Yeah, thanks, Will. Yeah, finally getting into the expanded universe of things, because I was frustrated not knowing enough about characters in general, uh-huh. And realizing I had to join the Nerd Boys and start reading the books. I can't think of a movie I've seen recently. So, Will, go ahead.
To play off of, actually, that reminded me that there was a great, great video that I saw earlier this week on Facebook, actually, from Star Wars Daily, just random Facebook video of it's a video of a guy, I guess, either filming his girlfriend or his wife or somebody. He's filming a girl watching the end of Rogue One. And her reaction to like the last 4 minutes of Rogue One is like the greatest thing I've seen on the internet in a long, long time. Because I mean, the recognition on her face, the sheer joy and the excitement, like when she sees, you know, the Darth Vader going through the hallway and they're recognizing she's on Tantive IV and then Princess Leia. I mean, she was first crying, you know, as you're watching sort of the mushroom cloud of after they've blown up, you know, Scarif there at the end. But just her entire, it's the greatest thing ever. If you haven't seen it, it'll brighten your day if you're a Star Wars fan, because we've talked about Rogue One before. It's a yeah. decent Star Wars film. The ending is great, but my joke with my friends is if you run to somebody that has that kind of honest and just sheer joy at the end of Rogue One of all movies, like you keep that person in your life, because that it was just perfect. But in terms of an actual recommendation. Since we did talk about Wonder Woman, we are talking about comics. I will give a brief pitch for comics. I've actually been doing a lot of comic reading uh-huh. lately, thanks to Wonder Woman being out. I got back into my love of comics and DC stuff. DC is in the middle of their big push called DC Rebirth after their New 52 initiative. If you don't want to try to have to get into the full cosmos and mythology and try to keep up with everything that goes on with DC and with comics, and there's a lot, admittedly, I would highly recommend at least picking up the first issue, which was the sort of the special, the launch of DC Rebirth. That one single comic issue is one of my favorite single shots of a comic ever. And because one of the things that I think we both mentioned, that we all three of us mentioned in this podcast about why we love Wonder Woman, that there's honesty to it, there's heart, there's sincerity, yeah. is that for the last couple of years, many of the comics didn't have a heart. They didn't understand why people loved certain characters. They forgot key things or totally erased major characters or plot lines and things that people loved that made these characters endearing. And this particular story tells it from the perspective of of Kid Flash, Wally West. And Wally West was written out, retconned, from their last big relaunch. And everyone's like, what happened to Wally? And so it's told from his perspective of Wally is trying to be remembered by the major characters in the DC universe and other stuff going on. And it's a very beautiful and powerful. It actually made me cry a little bit. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe a comic book made me cry. Because it was they remembered what made these characters special to so many people. And the fact that the characters themselves remembered why other characters were special, too. It's a really neat little comic. I highly recommend that.
Okay. So my brief recommendations. First off, there's this great article we'll try to post that Anna posted a few days ago from Paul Thomas Anderson's editor and Wes Anderson's editor talking about working with Paul Thomas Anderson and Wes Anderson, kind of the process of the movie, and really great article. And Anna, thank you for posting it, because I really highly enjoyed it. We'll try posting that. If you love filmmaking and if you're an editor or director, I think it's a really great, just a really short, great read. I just recently rewatched, so I like rewatching stuff as much as I can. I rewatched movie called Public Enemies, the Michael Mann film with Johnny Depp and Christian Bale.
Oh yeah, forgot about that movie.
I really like that movie. I think it still holds up. And it's sad because there are certain movies that when they come out, they're not massive hits and they're not massive hits critically, and so they kind of get forgotten and get passed over as the years go by. But it doesn't take away from like them being good. I think it's a really solid film. I love Johnny Depp and I love Christian Bale in it. Really great cinematography for an early digital film as well, because you can kind of tell it's digital, but it really works. I really enjoyed it. So I hope if you can find it somewhere, check it out. And then also go see Baby Driver. I will promote that to the end of my days. Or at least till the end of mid-July. Because it's a great movie. Because Thomas and I saw it about a month and a half ago. And I think it just premiered in L.A. last night. So, guys, get excited. You're going to love it. I hope you're going to love it.
It's going to be a while before that comes to Canada, probably.
Really?
Well, we always get things a little behind. Behind the schedule from the rest of the world, you know.
So you won't get to like September, is what you're telling me.
Okay, no. Like, we'll probably get it in like a few weeks or something. we're not that behind the times.
We'll get it next year.
Yeah, exactly.
So make sure you guys follow us on Facebook, or like us on Facebook, and then follow us on Twitter at Cinemation Show. Make sure you give us a review on iTunes and give us a rating. Tell us what you think about us, if you hate us, if you somewhat like us. But we like to hear from you guys, and we try to get better with the feedback we get from people. Also, make sure you follow us on Medium. I have a lot of good articles that are kind of posted daily, or at least every other day. And we're trying to do more stuff on there with the joint articles that we do. And at some point, Anna will post her Nicolas Cage video as well on there.
Give me like a year for that.
I can't give the, like, last time I gave a date that, like, said it'll be before Christmas for that Die Hard video.
And it was.
And it was.
I delivered.
You were like, oh, God, you just gave me a deadline. but it worked. And, thanks, yeah, Brandon. And make sure you follow us on Medium, because we're going to start hopefully doing some more giveaways on our social media. We got a lot of I got a lot of stuff stocked up in my apartment that I need to give away. But it's great posters and... we'll give you some Blu-rays, so stay tuned for that. I think that's it. Will, Anna, thank you for coming back on and joining us and talking about Wonder Woman.
Thank you.
I hope you guys listen to more episodes soon. Thanks. Bye.